Good afternoon, guys. Can you hear me? Yeah. Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for coming. I know it's the last day and kind of the last part of the last day, so double thanks for coming. And we're going to kind of make it as interesting and as interactive as possible. I'm Burzan Patel. I'm the Director of Marketing for the StorSimple solution. As you know, StorSimple was an acquisition by Microsoft about 6 months back, and we were kind of the original StorSimple team, which got acquired. I've got Jay Desai with me out here. Jay Desai is the worldwide technical solutions professional, TSP as we call them at Microsoft, and kind of leads the technology kind of implementations at all our kind of largest and most significant customer sites. So, just show of hands before we get started, how many of you guys are storage savvy technologists? Okay, so about we're kind of half, of, little bit less than half. So good. I think we're kind of going to hit the mark with this presentation. So really, as far as objectives go, I want to kind of start by giving you a kind of a solid foundation in storage. I know kind of storage is a somewhat of a loosely used term, and the challenges which underlie the storage are pretty vast, and you need to kind of understand and appreciate those to really kind of see how an Azure-based or a cloud-based storage solution helps you kind of solves a lot of your pain points today and kind of helps you reduce cost. So we'll take a look at that. Of course, we'll kind of go into great depths with the StorSimple solution itself. I want to kind of want you guys to kind of walk out with just a solid understanding of the StorSimple solution. We'll see a pretty in-depth end-to-end demo, which will be led by Jay. And then we'll kind of just talk about just an honest evaluation of when cloud-based storage is good for you and when you should kind of walk away and shy away from it. Yeah. Okay? So with that, let's get started. So storage, right? When we talk about storage, the first thing which comes to mind, rightfully so, nothing wrong with that, is the spinning media, which is storing your data, right? We call it primary storage or kind of mainline storage. That's where the data goes, right? So oftentimes when kind of you just a hallway conversation or something, when you kind of ask people, hey, how much storage do you have? Oh, I have 80 terabytes. I've got 20 terabytes. I've got 100 terabytes. What people really refer to oftentimes is the amount of actual data they have. That's true, and as I said, there's nothing wrong with kind of thinking about storage that way. That should be your kind of first thought. But keep in mind that from a CIO's perspective of all of you guys who are kind of data administrators, you know that that's just a kind of a piece of the overall cost and your ROI equation. If you talk to a CIO, they just don't think about 80 terabytes, right? It's 80 terabytes. There's oftentimes archival needs behind that. You have to back that data up. Of course, it's important data in your organization, so you have to back that up and be able to recover it pretty quickly. That's some nearline disk-based backup. You may also need some off kind of replicated and DR solution to kind of come online immediately in the case of a catastrophic disaster across your data center. And oftentimes, for compliance or kind of just offsite backup, you'll have an offsite solution, right? So again, primary storage you start with, right? And then you have all these other components, each of which often come with their own application and kind of way of doing things, their own complexities, their own level of expertise. So you may have kind of multiple administrators managing these different components. And of course, lastly, the same cost, right? And as far as challenges go, this equation basically results in a whole bunch of challenges for you guys as data administrators or kind of folks who kind of keep the lights on in your IT organization. There's the equipment sprawl problem. There's just data growth, right? Meaning it's like being on a treadmill. Data is growing. No one's deleting the data these days, right? IDC says data is growing 60% year over year, right? It's your job to kind of store that data and figure out how you store it within your kind of budget, yeah? There's the management complexity. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of repeated work. Even with automation, a lot of people kind of complain that there's still a lot of work to be done, yeah? their backup issues and restore issues constantly have to be tested out. And then there's DR, which is very difficult to test out without impacting your kind of your organization's kind of day-to-day operation, even over weekends. Yeah. So essentially storage today, the way we kind of look at it, it's complex and it's expensive. Now what StorSimple does is it takes the same problem, right, the same components which kind of exist in those challenges, and it solves it, solves those problems by way of having a 2U rack-mountable storage controller, which is the StorSimple appliance. You kind of see that in the green out there. And the Azure cloud in the back end. The combination of the Azure public cloud and StorSimple is what we kind of call hybrid cloud storage or the StorSimple solution, which really solves all these problems for you. And we'll kind of see that in a couple of in the next few slides. Yeah. So, you know, if you were to ask me kind of which is the most important slide in the presentation, it's this one, right? This one explains everything about our solution. If you know this slide, you know exactly what we kind of what we do, how we're configured, and how it kind of all works. And immediately after this slide, I'm going to let Jay do a demo for you. I want to kind of bring it together as quickly as possible, as upfront as possible, and we'll kind of talk about the other stuff later. So right on the top, you've got application servers, right? Those are your file servers, your SharePoint servers, Hyper-V servers, whatever. The application servers, which are creating the data and for which you have to store the data. Those application servers talk to the StorSimple appliance, which you see in the middle, over iSCSI, right? So it's a standard known industry protocol, iSCSI to the StorSimple appliance. Now, the StorSimple appliance has built-in storage, SSD storage, and SAS storage. So two tiers of storage built in, which are used to kind of store the hard working set data. And it's also connected, those two yellow lines at the bottom, over an HTTP REST protocol to the Azure cloud. Data which gets written from the application servers over iSCSI to the appliance gets stored on the appliance. And as additional data gets written and kind of pressure builds up on those tiers, the colder data, the less frequently used data, gets tiered down from SSD to SAS, spinning media, and then from SAS to cloud. Now, all that is automatic, right? That's our kind of secret sauce. That's our kind of core IP. It's stuff which there are no knobs, there are no kind of heuristics you have to sell, nothing you have to do. It's as far as you guys are concerned, it's a SAN, right? This solution is like an iSCSI-headed SAN. The fact that the data is tiering, we also kind of compress and deduplicate that data and encrypt it. We use an AES 256-bit cipher to encrypt the data before pushing it down to the cloud such that the data in the cloud is fully encrypted and not kind of, it's fully garbled. No one who kind of doesn't have those key, the key which only you kind of have, can make any sense of that data in the public cloud. So it really kind of passes the muster on a lot of compliance and kind of we've got insurance companies, financial companies who are kind of using the solution here. So that's really what it is. So at the end of all this, that's the configuration, that's the working of it. And just like you kind of have a C drive or a D drive on your Windows application servers or kind of VMware underneath kind of iSCSI-mounted VMware, you would have kind of a F drive or a G drive or whatever, which shows up as the StorSimple drive. The fact that it's all kind of tiered, deduplicated, compressed, encrypted, and tiered to the cloud is all completely transparent to you, and Jay will show that. Okay? So basically, advantages for you guys, fast on-ramp to the cloud, meaning I know a lot of you kind of already most likely going to do some stuff with the cloud, but if you're as far as data goes, it kind of gives you a great kind of easy, kind of low friction, low risk on-ramp to the cloud. It seamlessly integrates with your kind of existing kind of ways as far as archive goes, backup, and DR goes. We'll see that in the presentation. And it helps you reduce TCO, meaning total cost of ownership. And the ROI, I've got a slide which kind of talks about this. This is by far meaning, why is it interesting to you guys, or why should it be interesting to you guys? It's the money you can kind of save out here, the simplicity you can get, and kind of this all all-up solution in a single kind of package from a single company. So with that, let me kind of switch over and kind of let Jay do his demo. There we go. Thanks, Jay.
Now? Okay, perfect. So the idea of demo is for two folds, right? Think about the guys who talk storage on a daily basis, right? On how difficult or how much time you spend creating 100 terabyte volume, right? How do I back up? How do I do DR? And what are the steps involved when I go and configure my storage? For the guys who don't deal with storage on a daily basis, think about when you put in the request to your storage admin saying, give me 4 terabyte volume or give me 40 terabyte volume, he's going to ask you tons of questions before he goes and provisions you that storage volume. And the other message is simplicity that Burzin was talking about, right? Is storage should not, a lot of admins spend tremendous amount of time on configuring, managing storage, right? There are much higher priority tasks that they can focus on, and simplicity is the key message. Is I need 100 gig volume or I need 100 terabyte volume. The workflow should be identical and it should be simple to go and configure it, right? So to manage the StorSimple solution, it is basically 3 steps, right? And the reason for doing the demo now and showing all the simplicity components is at the back end, there are a lot more things happening, like Burzin mentioned, dedupe compression, encryption, all the iSCSI configuration. So he will go through that in the follow-up slides. But from a configuration standpoint, the first step is basic networking configuration, right? What interface do I present to my application servers, and what interface should be going and connecting to the Azure cloud? Should it be in the same VLAN or separate VLANs? You have the flexibility to go and configure, right? There are 4 NICs on the hardware, and you can pick and choose which NIC you want to use as your cloud-facing interface, or which one goes and talks to my application servers like the file share, SharePoint server. All those you go and define in this first screen, or what I call is the networking screen. DNS, because all the traffic leaving the StorSimple appliance going into Azure is all HTTPS traffic. So looking at Burzin's slide, the most common question I've got from my customers is, what firewall changes do I need? What infrastructure changes I go and implement? The answer is nothing. Basically, what we use is we support routing the traffic through proxy, or it is all HTTPS traffic, so it's using the port 443. So any user going to bing.com, it is essentially we'll use the same path to go and talk to the Azure data center at the back end, right? And then NTP to be in time sync with Azure, because I'll show you how we take backups. So when I move the data into Azure, and if I'm trying to restore, I want to ensure I have the right snapshot, correct date and timestamp, and I retrieve a single file using that. Now, the key message also from this demo is, like I said, there is no infrastructure change that is needed. But what we are trying to do is, rather than you trying and start leveraging cloud, we are trying to bring cloud to your data center. So here, all you do is go to your Azure portal, for those who have already played with Azure and those who know how to create a storage account on your Azure portal, you create nothing but a login and password on your Azure portal and copy-paste it out here. This is just notifying the StorSimple solution that when that hardware solution is full, which account you go and write that data into. That's all we are sort of creating the link from the StorSimple solution into Azure. And if your networking is in place, you have cut and pasted the keys well, essentially you'll get a verification that yes, now I can reach the Azure data center to which this account is mapped to, and now you can start creating volumes and start pushing data into. You can configure up to 64 different storage accounts, or what we call cloud accounts, as part of this solution. And each storage account could be talking to a different Azure data center. So it, a single store, simple solution, it is not tied to a single storage account or a single storage Azure data center. You can have mix and match of that as part of the solution. Now, the key concern, as Burzin goes through the slide also, you'll see is about security. The key question comes is, okay, I like the idea of tiering, I like the idea of backing my data into Azure, but you have full control. We as Microsoft have full control of your data. What if Microsoft got sued? Will you hand out the entire data set or what happens? The answer is no, because when you create this cloud configuration, you can punch in a passphrase or you could use your key management system and cut and paste an encryption key here. And we leverage AES 256 encryption for any data leaving the solution going into Azure. It could be the backups or it could be just the auto-tiering into cloud. So that is the key point, and hence we have customers in financial vertical, healthcare vertical, who have gone and adopted the solution for use cases like FileShare, SharePoint, and they're running those applications on this particular storage system. Now the third and the key main step is what volume do I need to create and how large a volume I need to create. So now at this point I can just go and create a volume and map it to an application server. So I'm just going to give it a name called demo server, and then we have various applications. So think about this type of volume is giving it a specific priority. As Burzin was mentioning, the intelligence is part of the software, right? Think about transaction logs or virtual machine guest OS images. You're going to commit the transaction logs into database. You're going to power on, power off the virtual machines quite often. Do I really need to tier it back and forth from StorSimple into Azure when the hardware is full? The idea is probably not. So based on the type you select, we will try to hold on that data. It is the best effort, not a guaranteed, that we will keep that data on the hardware as much as possible, and the non-critical volumes or think about file share volumes where I'm accessing a certain component of my data set and not all data set, that would tier before any of my transaction logs would tier. So this is giving it a priority is essentially what I'm doing. Map it to the cloud configuration we had in the previous screen, and now I could go and create a 100 terabyte volume just with these three easy steps. At the same time, you have this daily cloud snapshot policy, which I'm going to disable just for the demo, is it will create a regular backup schedule saying, whatever data you move into this volume, every night go and push that data into Azure. So if my hardware fails, if my data center goes down, or if I have a DR, I do truly have a backup in Azure on a daily basis. So that gives me a DR solution as part of the solution. Hence, Burzin was saying, the slide is, yes, we can do all of it, right? The tiering of your data, so now you don't need any archival software or archival storage. Azure becomes that. We don't need any backup software or backup storage or tape infrastructure, because now you can, through our cloud snapshot technology, which I'll show you, you can go and back that data into Azure. So I'm going to save it. And again, you have granular control saying only this demo server of mine has visibility to this volume. With that, on my application server, all I have done is through Microsoft iSCSI Initiator, we do support VMware workloads also. So you could use VMware iSCSI Initiator, connect to the StorSimple solution, and if I go to my disk manager now, I see that 100 terabyte volume already provisioned, and I can bring it online and format and start moving my applications to this volume. And obviously convert it to GPT, so I can use the entire 100 terabyte volume. For this demo, I already have a 5 gig volume, which I'm going to leverage. Same steps, I have just pre-provisioned just in the interest of time, so I can show you the backup into Azure. I have moved certain files, so that is mapped to this E drive, and I had moved files. So from a user standpoint or application standpoint, the cloud as a tier is not visible. he or she is still going to that file share path or the E drive for their SharePoint blob data, whatever it may be, and it's a single E drive appearing to them, right? The whole cloud latency components is completely masked out by the store simple solution. Now, how do I back that up? So we have this, what we call is a data protection console, which is nothing but a MMC console, right? The reason to use this MMC is for any Windows-based application, we integrate with the VSS framework, and those are application consistent snapshot. If you decide to move non-Windows-based application, the same task can be done from the web UI. Here you can see data protection, volume groups, policies, which I'm going to walk through and perform the task through a single interface if you need to. So what are the steps to now back up and do disaster recovery, right? Essentially, we go and discover that 5 gig volume, which was mapped to E drive, through some iSCSI APIs, we go and find out which are the volumes mapped to the store simple solution. The next step is creating what we call is the volume group. Reason for creating volume group is what I like to call is consistency group. You could have 10 or 15 file shares, you want to apply a single policy to that, so you just combine it into a group. Or you could have a database volume, log volume, and for VSS to take consistent snapshots, you're essentially creating a consistency group for that. Once that is done, once I have the volume group, I could take ad hoc local snapshots. Local snapshot is nothing but just pointers to where my data resides. Is it on SSD, SAS, or in Azure? The three tiers which Burzin mentioned about, it is just maintaining the pointers on the hardware. So your first line of defense or your short-term retention policies, you can go and create these local snapshots. In traditional world, most of my customers, and I come from the traditional world, I've been selling that, is there is some sort of replication you're doing, right? From one storage system to the other storage system, essentially for disk-to-disk based replication, and eventually to tape for the long-term retention. Cloud snapshot is the answer to that. The data on the hardware, the data into Azure, we essentially maintain the pointers and that data now in Azure. So this gives you long-term retention as well as the disaster recovery copy available in Azure, and now we are not tied to the secondary infrastructure. As long as you have another store simple device in your secondary data center anywhere in the world, you can mount these cloud-based snapshots and do your restores, which I'll show into. Just like traditional vendors, we do have what we call is the whole scheduling engine behind it, where you can schedule these daily snapshots, daily cloud snapshots, weekly, monthly, and have a scheduled policy behind it. So just everything that you've been used to in a traditional storage is available in that. So now, if a user goes and deletes the data, let's say some user goes and deletes his files and the calls help desk or the IT team and saying, I've deleted the files which were there yesterday or 6 months ago, I need to go and restore it back. The workflow to restore it is pretty straightforward. Is you would mount the latest snapshot, right? I could do a complete volume level restore. We know it was mapped to E drive, and we will populate that entire data set onto E drive. For a single file level restore, I could now go to E drive and say clone it, right? I'm going to call it restore from a snapshot and map it to a different drive letter, in this case J. So now I could go to J drive as soon as I mount it, which will be in seconds now, and copy and paste whatever files I need from J drive back to my primary E drive volume. At the same time, the same workflow, now assuming data was 6 years old or 60 years old, we have a healthcare customer who needs to retain data as long as the patient is alive, right? And they go back and retrieve their medical history over time. So for that same workflow, I could do a volume level restore, or I could go to that E drive and say restore from the cloud snapshot and map it to the K drive in this case. So the key thing to note is, and Burzin will highlight this also, is we are much faster than traditional backup software or tape recovery mechanisms. Is when that 5 gig data was pushed into Azure, at this point, all we are restoring back is the metadata information for that 5 gigs. We are not pulling down the entire data set and copying it to the K drive. And then when I pick and choose the files I want from K drive and move it to E drive, that is when the data actually gets retrieved back, and that way saves you the transaction cost, and the recovery time is much faster because all the data that I pushed through this cloud snapshot was already deduped and compressed. Hence, our recovery times are much faster because of that. So if I go back to my Explorer, I can see J drive with all the files. I can see K drive, which is coming from cloud snapshot. I'm going to copy it and move it back into my primary volume. And this is how fast your recovery can be from mounting a cloud snapshot piece. Just last 1 minute on disaster recovery now. In terms of disaster recovery, there are three steps now. On your primary appliance, I would back up the configuration, essentially the identity of the appliance, which has the encryption key, which knows, which also is aware of where my cloud snapshot is mapped to which storage account. On my DR appliance or my second appliance, I would go and import the configuration. In the same tab under import, I would import the configuration, and it will give me visibility into all the cloud snapshots available. The local snapshots are going to die with the hardware or during disaster, so my backup would be the cloud snapshot. It gives me visibility into all the cloud snapshots, and then I follow the same process to restore my data on the second appliance and have the integrated disaster recovery. So the solution is essentially providing the primary performance for the working set data, doing auto-archival or tiering, as we call, backup and restore down to individual file level, and the integrated disaster recovery through the same interface. Yep. Back to you.
Thanks, Jay.
Yeah. I'll let you switch.
That was perfect, guys. So, as I said, I think I kind of wanted to just bring it all together up front. You know, we're going to do it a little bit differently today. So any questions at this point? Mini, I want to kind of make sure you guys understand what the solution is and kind of just the simplicity aspect. I know, Jez, I was kind of standing there and I was looking at Jez's demo, and it just think about it. This is like what stuff people take 3 days, 2 days to kind of configure. He showed it to you in 15 minutes, so it does look kind of extra, a little bit more complex than it is, but it truly is simple, and this is kind of some stuff which is not what we claim, but what we've heard from customers. Question.
Is there a PowerShell support?
The question is there a PowerShell support for this? There's very minimal PowerShell support. The PowerShell support exists for just the repeating operations, all the configuration stuff, which is kind of one-time cloud create and all. We don't kind of have PowerShell support for that. Yeah. We don't support for that. Question. I'll take that next. What speed are the network ports? The network ports are 1 gig. 1 gig. Yeah. Ice Kazi. Yeah. Question. User rights management. Yeah. So as far as administering this box goes, and Jay logged in using an admin and a password, that is kind of the local user on this appliance. We also kind of support AD integration. So you could actually integrate with your AD. And for all the users in your AD, you could kind of then categorize them as an administrator or a monitoring user. A monitoring user can just kind of see, we didn't have time to kind of go into the graphs, but we've got some pretty detailed graphs. They can kind of see what's kind of going on the system, how much data is out in the cloud, how much is local, and kind of CPU utilization, just regular performance characteristics. Yep. Sorry? User question. So do you support user quotas? You can support. So we're an iSCSI block-based device, so no. There's no concept of a user on the block device. You could support user quotas by creating different volumes and kind of mounting them and kind of using Windows Cortex system to get around enforcing that. Okay, we can kind of, I think there are no more questions. We'll kind of continue the rest of the presentation, and we can come back to questions later. Okay, so all this is good, right? This is all cool stuff, but there are also kind of other sessions out here which talk about just the simplicity of adopting Azure and the cloud and the blob store, the blob storage in Azure. So why do you need this kind of piece of hardware, right? You can just kind of, you could just do this, right? Take your enterprise applications and connect it to the cloud. Not really. You cannot do that. And I'm sure kind of many of you guys are kind of smart enough to realize why, but I'll kind of cover it for you anyway. It's integration, right? You take your enterprise applications, you do not want to change the data access layer. Oftentimes you don't even have the code and don't even have the ability or the skills within the org to do that. You can't. Enterprise applications talk fiber channel, iSCSI. They want to see storage, like some nearline storage out there. They cannot talk HTTP REST protocol going to Azure, right? There is an impedance mismatch when you're going to try and do that. That's one of the problems we solve through the solution we just kind of showed you. Say magically you were to kind of get around this impedance mismatch and you figured out a way to kind of connect your enterprise application to the Azure cloud, or any cloud for that matter, the very next challenge you'd run into is performance. Most enterprise applications, other than the ones which are cloud-grown applications do kind of have started kind of doing intelligent caching and kind of only kind of requesting data when it's absolutely needed and all those kind of stuff, smart things. I think we'll kind of see the benefits of that like 5-7 years down the road, or maybe 3 to 5 years down the road. Today's enterprise applications will just fall flat on their face if you kind of were to connect them direct to the cloud. The reason for that is most of them are very chatty, right? And if you have a chatty application, and by chatty, I don't mean like 1,000 requests per second. Like even if you were to have like 2 or 10, and every request, which was supposed to be like a few milliseconds to a nearline disk, is now kind of 100 plus milliseconds going to the cloud and coming back, you're going to fail. The application's going to fail. Even if it works and the application doesn't fail, the user experience is going to be so poor that you may be out of a job soon. Yeah. And the last one, right? Security. When you kind of do something like this and kind of go straight to the cloud, what you're invariably doing is kind of going clear text to the cloud. And most organizations, however kind of much you kind of feel that is log data, and well, what's the big deal with log data, and this is archival data, what's the big deal with archival data? Nobody is going to kind of bless a solution which goes clear text all the way out to the cloud over an open WAN, even if it's HTTPS, right? There's a problem in transit. There's a problem at rest of the data being in clear text. So those are the challenges, right? So now let's kind of, we've kind of spoken about the solution. We've spoken about the challenges. Now let's get kind of more kind of in line with kind of when to use it and when to not, and kind of just the state of the industry and storage today. So as I said, IDC, according to IDC, data is growing 60% year over year, right? It's going through the roof on that exponential curve. Now, if you kind of peel back the onion on this data growth, you will see that the data which you or customers really care about is not growing exponentially, right? That's just kind of a sliver of the overall data, and it's pretty easy to understand, right? If you have a 10 terabyte file share today, and you've got 1,000 employees, and the 1,000 employees are using 100 gig of data on a kind of daily or a weekly basis, when that file share grows to 80 or 100 terabytes, and you still have 1,000 employees, doesn't mean that the employees are going to start kind of using 8 or 10 times more data on a daily or a weekly basis, right? It's not going to become kind of 800 gig or a terabyte. It's still going to be user pattern and user behavior doesn't change. They're still going to be kind of using 100 gig of data a day or a week, right, referencing that data. That green data is what we call hot data or working set data, right, the data which you really care about. The other data you care about too, but you can kind of, you don't care about it from a performance perspective. And that's where the StorSimple solution comes in. where we basically intelligently identify which blocks are hot or your working set and which are cold. We keep the hot blocks around on those SSD and SAS tiers and tier out everything else to the cloud. Again, pretty simple concept and pretty simple to understand, very effective. It's because of this that we can kind of save 50 to 60% ROI for you guys by really kind of marrying or blending the economics of the cloud with the performance, which your applications and you expect, of local storage, which resides on the store simple appliance, right? So essentially, we're kind of taking CapEx from that exponential growth. So rather than you kind of having to buy kind of yet another big refrigeration cabinet type frame of traditional storage today, maybe in 6 months, maybe in another 6 months, you basically kind of buy a store simple appliance, and as your data grows, you just kind of tier out the old and cold data to the cloud. At any point in time, your hot working set data stays resident local. And you can have kind of multiple solutions as well. We'll kind of see a couple of customer case studies and then see how they've kind of adopted it here. So if you understand that this is the use case and this is kind of how we do it, you'll quickly realize that there are a set of applications which kind of fall really kind of well in the sweet spot for store simple. So file shares, right? I gave you the example of kind of having 80 terabytes of data, but only really caring about 100 gig hot working set. Great use case, right? That's what Jay demoed earlier. SharePoint is another one, right? SharePoint kind of is notorious for kind of making it so simple for people to kind of create versions and kind of just upload everything into a doc library. It's one of kind of the fastest growing kind of applications from a data perspective. Big problem with SharePoint and storage in the back end. We have a kind of a very, very compelling and kind of powerful solution for SharePoint. Archives is another one, right? Just media archives. We've kind of got an engineering company who kind of stores all their construction data. We've got media companies who kind of have these 32 gig zip files for all their kind of media recordings. And VMs, right? VMs is very interesting because VMs, the problem is, well, file shares is you kind of have a million or kind of millions of files which are pretty small. VMs, you have fewer files which are really big, right? So these few files for VMs can cause big problems in your shop pretty quickly. And that's what kind of, again, kind of same methodology, great use case. You know, just on the negative use case, I don't know kind of how many of you are thinking about this, but a couple of things which don't work well with us. Right? We might as well be honest. We don't want you to take on stuff which is not going to work and fail, meaning it makes us look bad and kind of gives you a kind of poor experience. Business intelligence applications, right? They don't work because one of the characteristics of a business intelligence application or if you have a cube and you're rebuilding the cube on a daily or weekly basis, essentially what you're doing is you're taking your entire data set, right? Going back to my example, maybe it's 80 terabytes. You're taking that 80 terabytes and you're kind of reading through it every day or every week to kind of rebuild your cube. That doesn't work out there, right? There's no concept of a hot working set in that case. All your data is hot all the time. So do not use like a BI type application on Store Simple, right? Another one is like a large transactional database like Dynamics or SAP, right? Yes, you do have kind of a few tables which are being accessed, and the argument could be that, hey, that's the working set. Everything else is cold data. What's the big deal with that? No, there is a big deal with that. The problem is those applications or you guys, every once in a while, will kind of kick off an administrative task like rebuild index or something, which will ream through the entire data set or kind of all the tables and kind of force it to bring it all down from the cloud, make it all hot, and then kind of tier it back up again. So anytime you have to kind of cross that WAN link to access a large portion of your data, it's not a good use case. Okay, so let's just kind of see just pictographically how this works, right? So what you see out there is the three tiers. I've actually broken it up into four tiers because SSD tier is broken up into two layers, and I'll explain to you why. So when data gets written to Store Simple, the iSCSI blocks, kind of the iSCSI data kind of comes in, it gets broken up into 64 kilobyte blocks, and it just immediately gets ingested into this thin layer, which we call the SSD linear layer. The reason we kind of do it this way is because we don't want any I/O delays in acknowledging kind of the hardening of a write, right? So immediately we basically consume, ingest the data, and we kind of say, hey, you're good. Go ahead with the next operation, right? Mr. Application, go ahead. Now, as more and more data gets written, pressure builds on this tier, and we've got worker threads on the side which kind of spin up and push, deduplicate the data and push it down to the SSD deduplicated tier, right? And that data is deduplicated, so you saw that a couple of blocks got deduplicated and didn't show up on the deduplicated layer. Same again, same mechanism. Again, as pressure builds up, data gets compressed and pushed out to the compression layer. Now you'll see that we kind of pushed out three of the blocks, not all of the blocks, so it's on a need basis, right? We don't needlessly just go and kind of keep tearing down everything. There is an advantage of keeping stuff on kind of the higher layers. If it's hard data, it's going to be referenced again, and you're going to get better performance. So we don't do unnecessary operations, just kind of tearing everything down. We know when the blocks are hard, when they're kind of cooling down, and we kind of do the right thing. And again, kind of over time, as additional pressure builds, we basically push it down, encrypt the data, and push it down to Azure. Okay, again, pretty simple, right? Meaning this is not rocket science. It's not supposed to be rocket science. What it's supposed to be is going to be simple and save you money and time and just make your life easier. So that's tiering, right? Tiering down. Now what happens when 6 months roll by and some user comes along and say they kind of realize that, hey, this one file I kind of had saved it 6 months back, I want to access it. That file had got tiered out to the cloud. What would happen is that the application at the top, be it a file server or another application, would make a request that, hey, I want block E. Okay? The request would come to the Store Simple appliance. The appliance would know that, hey, I know this block E exists. It's not in SSD tier. It's not in the SAS tier. It's in the cloud tier. What does it do? It pulls it back, so it will unencrypt it or decrypt it. It'll deduplicate it, undeduplicated and kind of put it back for the application to access. This motion, kind of the reverse way, kind of going up the stack, is also kind of fully automated. And it didn't kind of come through in the demo because it was kind of a smaller data set, but you can see this pretty quickly as your local tiers fill up. That's the operation. That's the full automated operation. Now, Jay spoke about this a little bit. So everything we've been kind of talking about so far is what you guys kind of see on your left-hand side, right? You've got a data center, some data center one, production data. It's tiering out to the cloud. You've taken some backups to the cloud. Life is good, right? Now, say something unfortunate were to happen to your data center and the data center goes down. What you could do is, as Jay showed you, you could take that configuration file, apply it to another Store Simple appliance in any data center. It could be any worldwide data center which has access to the Azure cloud. It will automatically kind of get the credentials that get pointed to the right Azure accounts, right buckets, and it would kind of drain down the metadata, show all your volumes just like you had on the primary data center, and over time, as your application or as you start accessing that data, the data gets retrieved from the cloud on an as-needed basis and becomes hot over time, right? We don't kind of maintain any heat map and kind of pull down hot data. It doesn't work. We once had that feature, and it's not a very clever feature. We've since kind of moved away from it. We just let the application over time kind of drain down the data. And almost all our customers today, no, actually not almost all our customers today take cloud-based backups. I would say about 50% of them or more have a mechanism through which they kind of do DR. Like if I were to kind of give you an example of Monterey Bay Aquarium, which is kind of an aquarium in California, not far from where I live, they actually, they're a nonprofit, so they have a kind of a shoestring budget to work with. And Brian Fulmer, who's the director of IT, he actually was kind of looking to, they were kind of a traditional storage shop. They were kind of looking to save money. They heard about this. They loved the solution. They loved the ROI around it. What really kind of convinced him to kind of jump over and kind of adopt the solution was DR. His point being that the data center, their data center is in a wooden building. That's just how it is built, right? He always knew that he needed DR. He never had the budget to afford it, right? So it wasn't kind of any lack of knowledge or initiative which kind of prevented them from having DR. It just, they just didn't have the budget. And with this simple solution, with this no-cost DR, right, keep in mind that this is a pretty big deal because normally you would otherwise have to have a kind of a mirrored SAN or whatever traditional storage out here. If you spent $400,000 or $600,000 on the primary, you would be spending something very close to that on the secondary DR side if you wanted that. And what we're saying is basically we kind of give you that same functionality with much kind of a simpler solution at a kind of much, much lower price point. Yeah. Okay, so just kind of jumping into security a little bit. I know we covered quite a bit of it. This is a big deal, right? Meaning I think half the conversations I have with customers invariably kind of run into, hey, is my data secure, right? I'm concerned about my data. I think as kind of the solutions got more adopted and kind of we've got kind of a lot of large enterprise customers. We've got kind of more than 100 now. This concern is kind of becoming less, but it used to be kind of a pretty prevalent question a couple of years back. So as you saw, the data tiers down and we kind of deduplicate it, we compress it, and we encrypt it, right? So each time the data kind of morphs into a deduplicated form or a compressed form, it's in its sense kind of getting encrypted, right? Deduplicated data, compression, all of them kind of are in a sense kind of a level of encryption in themselves. Of course, after that, we have the AES 256 encryption built into the appliance. And one thing to emphasize out here is every byte of data we send to the cloud is encrypted. It's not like there's some side channel through which some data can kind of sneak out to the cloud. There's no such side channel. And the encryption keys stay with you as the owner of the solution and kind of the administrator. And when the data is at rest in Azure, it's kind of fully obfuscated through the compression deduplication process as well as through the encryption process. And the data, as it's being transmitted over, as Jay showed you, is HTTPS encrypted. So really kind of multiple layers of encryption and kind of security built into the solution. If the data is out in Azure, I can kind of assure you, no one can kind of get to it, make any sense of it. And I kind of sometimes joke with people that, you know, if the data is in Azure, someone gets a hold of it and they can really decrypt it and kind of get to it, they almost deserve the data, so they should have it. Yeah. But, yeah. Okay. So, moving on, right? This question comes up a lot. It's like, okay, great solution, right? Can I just use it as a backup target? Meaning I've got all this tons of data. I just want to back it up to the cloud. And this seems like a great way of just kind of dumping it onto this iSCSI volume. And you take care of the tiering, and you kind of push it out to the cloud. Yes, that's kind of a logical way of kind of looking at it. We don't kind of look at backup that way. And I'll kind of explain to you why we kind of don't encourage that. I know I spoke to a gentleman at the back before the session, and this is what he was kind of trying to see if it was a good fit. So let me kind of just show you this graph line chart first, right? The red line is regular backups. That's how long it would take you if you had data out in the cloud, right? If you had to do a restore from it, that's how long it would take you, right? If you had 100 terabytes of data in the cloud, it would take you close to 100 days to restore it over a 100 megabit pipe, right? So it's about 1 terabyte a day over a 100 megabit pipe. That's the math. You can kind of do it. That's the rule of thumb we use, yeah? If it's tape you're restoring from, it would be about 7 days. It would be some time to kind of get the tape from Iron Mountain or whoever, kind of put it in the system, kind of restore it. And then there's store simple backup, which, of course, kind of it increases with the size of the backup, which you're restoring. It ranges anywhere from like 15 minutes for a terabyte to about a day in which you can kind of restore 100 terabytes. Now, let me kind of tell you what the difference is and kind of why store simple is so much better. When you're going to have a backup, when you have these tarball files, right, these BAK files, which you're just kind of pushing up to the cloud, in the event of a disaster, you have to retrieve the entire BAK file before you can crack it open and restore your data, right? That's what's taking the 100 terabytes. If you have 100 terabytes of the BAK files which you have to restore, it's going to take 100 days to. That's what's taking 100 days. Now, when the data is on store simple, as Jay showed you, we still have 100 terabytes in the cloud. Of course we do, right? I mean, that's your data. We have to kind of maintain the fidelity of the data. But in the event of a restore, we don't restore all 100 terabytes to be able to surface that up to you. What we do is we take the metadata for those 100 terabytes, which is usually about 0.3%, so it would come to about 300 gig. We would download the 300 gig, and that would take some time, right? I mean, you can kind of see it takes an hour, couple of hours, whatever. We would download that metadata, and then we would immediately, as soon as that metadata gets downloaded, we expose that volume as a fully consumable volume, and that's what Jay showed you, right, when he kind of took that backup and he restored it to the K drive. What he really did, what that virtual mount of that K drive was the metadata coming down from the cloud and expose it out as a K drive. The data corresponding to this, right? So the almost the 99 terabytes in this example would still be out in the cloud, right? It wouldn't be pulled down up front. Now, as the volume comes online and you find the files which you want to kind of get to after the recovery, when you click on those files, that's when the blocks corresponding to those files will actually get pulled down. So yes, initial access will be a little bit slower, right? But that's fine, right? You're kind of going from like 100 days to 1 day. That's the behavior which most of you guys kind of have asked for and what we kind of deliver. Thank you. You can buy the solution after this. Discounts, yeah. I get like the Surface specials. Cool. So just talking models and capacity, we've got four models, 50-20, 70-20, 55, and a 75-20. What they are feature compatible, exact feature sets in each appliance. So there's no kind of difference from a feature functionality perspective. The difference is in the amount of local SSD and local SAS, the size of those tiers, which are available on the appliance. Yeah. You can kind of download this presentation. It's also available on storesimple.com, so you can kind of view the specifications there. But we've got four models which go. I would say the middle two models kind of constitute about 70-75% of our deployed customer base, and the 75-20 being the other 75%. The 50-20 with its kind of smaller local tiers hasn't kind of been a hard seller. And another reason it's not been a hard seller is, you know, when people look at traditional storage and store simple solution, the store simple solution is already so much cheaper, right, that they don't mind kind of going up the stack a little bit. They don't want to kind of go all the way to the bottom because it's they've already kind of saved big bucks by adopting the solution. So, as I said, we've got kind of 200-plus customers now. We've got the solution out in the market for more than 2 years with these current models, 3 years if you count the previous model. A couple of good industry analyst perspectives on the store simple and just kind of cloud storage and hybrid cloud storage in general. You could kind of download these and kind of read through them from storesimple.com. Just wanted to kind of flash that out here. The StoreSimple Microsoft solution is the only solution, only kind of hybrid cloud storage solution, I should say, which is certified both for Windows 12 and Windows 2008 R2, as well as VMware certified. So if you kind of take VMware and ESX, I believe the number is 80% of the guest OSs running on VMware are Windows OSs. So you could kind of have store simple storage underneath on the ESX, using the ESX iSCSI initiator that's fully supported, and use kind of Windows above that. And as you can see, we've been recognized as the industry leader in what we do, kind of won a whole bunch of awards in the last four years we've been around and had the solution around. Okay, so let's take a look at a customer case study, right? So this is a semiconductor company out of Texas, and their problem was pretty simple. They had a lot of data, right? They have all these engineering drawings, which are growing, kind of. So their daily kind of or their monthly data growth was 1.8 terabytes per site, and they've got kind of multiple sites in North America and worldwide. And these are kind of classic archival, I think I need them for compliance, but I don't know if I'll ever use them type data, right? So they estimated 90%+ never being accessed. They were storing it on traditional storage and kind of paying big bucks. They heard about the Store Simple solution, did a quick proof of concept. They wanted to kind of just vet it out because it was kind of different from what they'd been doing for the last 15 years. They did kind of a quick four-week, five-week test in their data center, loved it, and immediately kind of deployed it to three of their centers, Austin, kind of Texas, Arizona, and two in Arizona. Just to kind of give you a feel for how significantly they've adopted this, their Azure commitment. So they initially kind of started with a 300K Azure commitment, 300K per year, which is 900K over kind of a three-year period, which is what they've kind of committed to. And a couple of months after that, they kind of saw the value, and they kind of bought two more systems for two additional sites, committing another 200K. So just a $500,000 commitment per year for Azure and for Store Simple. So they're really kind of betting big. This is going to become their primary store for all this kind of archival class of data. And, you know, one thing I kind of haven't mentioned to you guys explicitly is when you think about Store Simple, you know, in any shop, you've got your tier one type of data, right? And the tier one type of data is the one which is transactional, right? Very frequently accessed. You need kind of super high performance. You need kind of super high everything, right? You don't want any part of that data set to be slow. That's what I define as tier one. Tier two is very important data. Tier two, that doesn't mean you can kind of delete the data, it can get deleted and no one's going to kind of fire you. That's not the definition of tier two. Tier two is just from an access pattern and performance perspective. There is a set of data which is tier two, tier three. Some people also kind of have tier four. For all that data class, tier two kind of lower, Store Simple is a great solution, right? If you kind of look at this use case, semiconductor files, they need it, maybe not. They don't want to spend big bucks. Tier two type data, like great use case for Store Simple. Okay, this is the ROI I kind of mentioned several times in the so far. Without going kind of too much into the details, what we have is traditional storage, which is the second last column from the right, and the Store Simple solution, which is the last column, and all those kind of storage components we saw on the first slide, right? You've got your primary storage, you've got your backup media, you've got disk-based backup, tape-based backup, and kind of some DR solution. You add them all up, and you see how we kind of, how what I kind of claim about the 60-80% savings. I'll give a couple of people taking pictures. Okay. Okay. Now, as far as adoption goes, we had an offer, a program going on where through which you could kind of get, you could commit $50,000 of Azure to your enterprise agreement, EA. I'm sure most of you guys are familiar with that, which would translate to about 50 terabytes of usable storage space. So that's why kind of the top reads 50K and 50 terabytes. And with that, we would give you, if you did that, we would give you the Store Simple appliance at no cost. We had another offer for 100K, which would translate to about 100 terabytes of storage, through which we would also kind of give you a store simple appliance at no cost. That would be the kind of the larger appliance, the 7520, along with kind of 1 year of support. And if you wanted to kind of upgrade in any way, you kind of had a couple of options. This offer actually ends tomorrow. Actually, today in the U.S., but we're going to be renewing it for another 6 months. So I still wanted to show you the slide. It's going to be kind of reinstated, and you're going to kind of be able to leverage it as well. So if you have an interest in this, send me a note, Sanjay a note, or kind of contact your Microsoft sales professional. They all know about this stuff. Okay. So all good stuff, right? Meaning I've kind of covered a lot of stuff. Now, how would you know if you need store simple and kind of cloud integrated storage, and if this is kind of something for you, or so something kind of applicable to you, or applicable to kind of some other person or shop, or kind of use case within your shop? Yeah. So a couple of questions to ask yourself, kind of to quickly kind of calibrate whether the solution is applicable to you, is do you have kind of a storage problem, right? Is your storage really kind of on an explosive, exponential growth path? If it is, like the semiconductor company from Texas, absolutely, yeah. Meaning you need to kind of consider store simple. Are you kind of just tired and kind of just at this complexity around storage and storage management? The Monterey Bay Aquarium example, which I gave you, by the way, one thing I kind of didn't tell you about Monterey Bay Aquarium is after they've been running for 2 years now, and the director of IT, we've got a kind of a quote from him. He claims that he has saved 20% or one work weekday off his data administrator by using Store Simple, and the primary savings have come about just in kind of the automated kind of methodology we have and mechanisms we have. And the primary one out of that being the elimination of tape. So they had some really convoluted and complex ways of kind of taking tape backups, and eliminating those have saved them 20%, which is pretty significant if you kind of think about a data administrator kind of making six digits. That's a pretty significant saving in just 1 year. Simplifying storage, getting rid of tapes, right? Tapes are complex to manage, and they're kind of not always kind of reliable. They're cheap, right? And that's why, no, they're not. You gentlemen didn't kind of agree with me. Yeah, some people claim tapes are expensive, but, well, some, they are kind of cheap from just a raw tape perspective. But everyone uses them. No one kind of really likes them, but everyone's forced to use them because there's been no kind of real equivalent kind of solution which addresses the problem at the reasonable price point. That's where Store Simple kind of comes in with its kind of cost-effective storage, and largely VM sprawls, right? A lot of companies are seeing just this kind of this proliferation of VMs in their shop, right? Developers, kind of administrators, whoever, rather than taking snapshots of VMs, they'll kind of work on their VM, they'll shut it down, they'll make a full copy of the VM just to kind of make a backup of it and move on, right? Next day or next in the afternoon, they'll do exactly the same thing. And before you know it, they've taken up like terabytes of storage. So VMs is kind of becoming a big problem. I don't know how kind of prevalent it is in your shop. We're kind of hearing a lot of complaints around this and kind of a strong use case around this. Okay, so that was the end, kind of some related content and kind of email. If you have any questions, feel free to kind of drop me a note. I also kind of handed out some flyers, just kind of the basic brochures of the Store Simple solution for you to read. It's got kind of the URL embedded in there. And yeah, I'm sure you've seen these slides 100 times. One more, 101. And please do fill out your review. And thank you for coming. If you have any questions, we can kind of take them now. Yeah, question. I can't hear you. Sorry? Question. Yeah, great question. The question was, do I need to cluster those appliances? No, absolutely not. You do not cluster those appliances. Each appliance is highly available and fully fault tolerant, right? So each appliance has dual controllers, dual power, four network ports, four channels. Jay showed you in the demo, there were four networks set, four IP addresses, four channels going into each controller. We support MPIO. So really, all the way from the application server to the cloud, there is no single point of failure, right? MPIO going into the appliance, dual controllers, rated drives, kind of going out to the WAN, and Azure, as you know, stores each byte of your data in three times, right? It's triply replicated in Azure. So you're kind of fully fault tolerant out there. So my answer to you is you do not need to cluster and you do not need to kind of make them, you're really already double protected. If you were to cluster, you'd kind of be four-way protected. If you wanted to do that, you could do mirroring or something, but highly not recommended. Nobody uses that. Yeah. Any questions? Cool. Going one, going twice, going thrice. Cool. Thanks for coming, everyone. Any questions, just drop us an email.